This episode is part of our ongoing series with NI Connections, where each month we've the chance to sit down with someone interesting from Northern Ireland who's living and working overseas. To find out more about our global diaspora, listen to previous episodes in the series and sign up for a free monthly newsletter. Please visit niconnections.com. Thanks so much, and really hope you enjoy today's conversation.
What did you have for breakfast?
What did I have for breakfast? I shared my breakfast with a toddler. So I had 3 bites of pancake, which actually belonged to him. I had peanut butter toast and a cup of coffee.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And the wee lad, like, does he like meat? I feel like that's a pretty important question.
Yeah. He likes biltong and he's conditioned. Good. He's conditioned, he likes druvor, so anything in a brown paper bag to him is druvor or biltong, which sometimes leads to massive amounts of crying because it's not. But yeah, so yeah, he likes druvor. Druvor is his thing. My nephews call me Auntie Sticky for that very same reason. So I'm not Ilsa, I'm Auntie Sticky.
That's awesome. So South Africa originally?
South Africa originally.
And you're arachnophobe?
I hate spiders.
I mean, how does that mix? That can't be right.
I'm not great with spiders. Really not great with spiders. To the point where if there's a spider, Alana is the one who catches the spiders in our house.
Sure.
Yeah. I stay well away from them. I will burn the house down. Yeah.
I mean, successful prop. Great career in rugby and, you know, put you in front of any ruck, sorted. It's busy. Now I'm out of here.
No, not my thing. Not my thing. It's surprise spiders. It's those that run on the floor and you can hear them. I don't do those either. I will literally sit in a ball on the sofa and just go like, I'll wait for you to pass.
What's the biggest spider you've seen?
A rain spider in South Africa. And I've got a friend who is like, in South Africa, he's like he's not that tall, but he's got massive hands. And it was a rain spider that was literally the size of my two hands. And it was in the shower, and therefore it was not my shower anymore. It was the spider shower.
You receded it. You're like, you can have it.
You can have it. That's yours. That's yours. Have a wash. The towels are over there. And then please get away. Bugger off.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's... That's the biggest spider I've seen.
So growing up, any family had anything to do with the butchery trade?
Well, my grandparents were farmers, but not meat. They were on a fruit farm. Again, meat in South African, especially in Afrikaans culture, is quite big. We don't do barbecues. A barbecue is a queue of barbies. We braai, and it would literally be an event. It's an event on the calendar every Saturday. You have your friends over. Everybody is basically around the fire. There's a braai master. You don't give advice. You don't. You just
no
leave them.
Brian.
No, you just let them do what they do. Do their magic. But it would be a whole day event. There would be little nibbles that comes off the braai. You would have there's a little thing called the oopsie, which is literally like rashers of bacon, like streaky bacon with glazed cherries that you would crisp up on the barbecue, and you would eat that. And literally, it will come off, and people will eat a bit, and then you would eat a bit of chicken wings, and you would eat a bit of this, and you would eat a bit of that.
I thought it was like oopsies and like oopsie daisy, like fell off.
Yeah. But then. At the end of it, there would be your big meal with steaks and vors, but like boerewors. We don't do little sausages and burgers, and salads and sides. So it is a big event, and it's a very, very good feed, and there's normally loads of alcohol.
Awesome.
Consumed while you're doing it as well.
So you're saying vors?
Vors.
Right?
Yes.
Is that any connection to like the German word wurst?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So like bratwurst is a type of sausage.
Yes.
And vors is that Afrikaans or what are
it's
we
Afrikaans.
Dealing here? Yeah, okay. For sausage.
Sausage.
But not the small stuff. You're into the real
proper.
Yeah.
So boerewors, which is the big coils, We do pork sausages and stuff like that, but to us, pork sausages is a breakfast food. So you will have, like you would have your bangers.
Yeah.
We would have pork sausages with our breakfasts.
Love that.
So, yeah.
Cool. Grew up playing rugby?
I grew up watching my dad play rugby.
Right.
My parents were both very sporty. My mom played a game called korfball, which is similar to netball.
Yeah.
My dad played Eastern Transvaal rugby. So he was a lock and a flanker. Again, when my biological dad actually passed away when I was quite young, I was 12, and then my mom remarried, and Leon, who is our stepdad, but for all accounts, anybody who takes you through puberty is your dad, especially if he manages to survive it. He was very into his rugby as well. Big Northern Transvaal supporter. He didn't really play anymore. He was a runner, but his brother Martin played prop for the Northern Transvaal team.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I come from a sporty family, sports background.
Cool. Oh, I'm curious then, like, just because we've kind of alluded to it. What was your dad's most expensive 10 minutes of his life?
So
much clickbait involved here. I'm like, I just need to know. Like, it's too tantalizing.
So in 2017, when I played for Ireland, I got called up to the Irish Six Nations squad.
Awesome.
My parents flew back to South Africa after Christmas on the 3rd of January. And then they flew back from South Africa on the 1st of February to come and watch me play my first match to get my first cap against Scotland.
Awesome.
In Scoutstown in Glasgow.
Oh yeah, easy
and
to get
I
to.
I was very easy. Yeah.
You fly into international Heathrow. Airport.
Yeah, you have to fly into Heathrow, and then from Heathrow you take a train.
Oh, brutal.
He always joked and said that was his most expensive 10 minutes of his life, watching me get my first Irish cap.
That's awesome.
At Scoutstown. So, yeah.
So how have you balanced work with sport throughout your life?
You prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite good at compartmentalizing things, so I have my sports basket and I have my work basket, and it's if I really want to do something, I plan. Mm-hmm. So I would take that, especially when I was involved in the national setup, it was early morning. So, and I was up, if I have to get up at 5:45 in the morning, I'm up at 4:45 in the morning, regardless of what time I went to sleep. And it's just managing it and planning it. And planning your day around what you need to do in order to make sure that you get all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. That's it.
Where did you learn to become a butcher? I feel like I genuinely have so much respect for you, because like I think like I don't even know what the right language is. This shows you how disconnected I am. Like butchering, the art of butchering, I don't know.
Well,
it's so fascinating to me because it's a hard skill. You know, like this is a skill that like humans have had for like since humans have been around. And I as a consumer, I'm so far removed from the food that I eat. You know, the closest point of contact I have is whenever I go to the butcher and he tells me about something. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. I'm pointing at a bit of meat. I'm like, what part of the animal is that from?
Yes. So I think it's definitely an art. It's a skill.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's a dying skill, because there's not a lot of people who's interested in becoming butchers.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, you see butcher shops close frequently because there's no one to take over or no one to follow in the butcher's footsteps whenever the butcher comes to retirement age. So it's definitely an art. But I do think that the times that we live in, where there's a massive push towards veganism, has a big thing. It has a lot to do with it. And there's a lot of people who would come to me and say, oh, but you are, what's the line that I got thrown with recently? Oh, I am the facilitator to the murder of innocent animals.
Oh, there
and
you go.
I was just like, pause.
Yeah.
Let's just pause there for a second, because you've got no idea about what my process is.
Yeah.
Basically your mind boggles when people come and tell you that. But it's because people are so disconnected.
Yeah.
There's people jumping on fads, going, "Oh yeah, we're going to go vegan because this, this, and this, and it's good for the environment." And you go like, "Whoa." It depends on where you are getting your food from. And let's face it, the best way to be a good vegan that cares for the environment is to eat seasonally and to eat locally. So do you eat potatoes and leeks for 4 months of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's basically all that's available if you don't have a polytunnel.
Sure. How do you enjoy sauerkraut? You better buckle up.
And buckle up,
you'll be eating a lot of cabbage.
You're going to eat a lot of cabbage. But I'm also a big believer that each to their own. I don't force my beliefs or my will on people.
Absolutely.
I am very lucky in the sense that I am a butcher with a conscience. So I do not support factory farming.
Mm-hmm.
I do not support any industry where I believe they are doing the environment and where they are destroying the environment. Between the butchery at Ballylagan, where I am the full-time butcher, and Kanaku, we only work with organically reared animals, which comes from organic stock, is raised on organic land, is fed organically certified feed. At Ballylagan is massive for recycling, reusing. There's very little waste. And as a butcher, every time an animal gives their life for me to make something from that, I will use every single bit of workable meat to give that animal the respect that they deserve. And we are as beings, we're omnivores, so I enjoy eating meat, but I also need to eat meat in order for my body to be properly nourished.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you've got like the ideology on one side, okay, which is like veganism. Go ahead, take a wee drink. I'll buy us some time here. I'll ramble out. I'll elongate my sentence.
You're also going to edit that. So you can make me stutter a little less because my brain is not. I'm just like, hello, brain, engage. Because I've got the sentence in there, but it's half in Afrikaans and it's half in English. And then I need to structure it. And then I'm like, oh, I can't remember what that word.
So you've got, you know, I'm going to call it like the ideology of veganism, okay? You've got that. Then you've got, as you've already alluded to, you've just got like the supermarket, you know, the industrial machine that is big market. And, you know, that has done unbelievable damage to your profession. I actually think one of the biggest damages that it's done is it's disconnected the end user. It's pushed them even further away from the process. And that's why I really wanted to get you in today, because when we met at Elmfield Market a couple of months ago or whatever it was, it was the process that I was really, really invested in, you know, and it's the story behind food and it's the nutrition behind food as well, because what we have also lost, yes, we've lost environmental things. Yes, we've lost, you know, personal relationships with our butchers and education, but we've lost a lot of nutrition in this process as well. And the cows that you're talking about here, I know for a fact, even if you look at something like omega-3, skyrocket levels in comparison to what I can get at a big, you know, unnamed supermarket.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's fed with corn, it's treated terribly, and it's not going to have half the nutrients that my body needs to thrive, whereas your product has that, you know?
Well, I do think that in Northern Ireland we're quite lucky because we're still, again, it's a small community with small farms and small producers. Okay, some of them are not so small anymore. But We tend to be a small community-minded organism in Northern Ireland.
Yes.
So you will focus on the little things that you're doing. But I remember as a kid, my grandparents on the farm was quite self-sufficient. So I would stand and watch my granny make French for fresh mince. So they would get a beef animal and they would process the beef animal into what they needed. But my granny would never mince and then freeze the mince. Mm. She would always cube the meat, freeze it, defrost it, and then make her mince that she uses that day.
Interesting. Okay, so give me the why.
Because she just believed that it gives her better mince. It's not mince that's loaded with water.
Yeah.
I would watch her make sausage in the kitchen. So all the boerewors and the sausages and stuff that they ate, she made in the kitchen herself. And as a kid, you never quite appreciate that those processes.
Mm.
And when I started butchering, because I'm actually a chef, and then I had to change. You can't be a chef and play rugby. It doesn't
the unsociable
quite
arse
work.
Don't really think a bit of a clash, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a clash. There's a massive clash between playing rugby and working in the kitchen.
What sort of chef? That might be a bit of an ignorant question, but
I basically started at the bottom.
Yeah, of course.
So I haven't really gone any further from just being kitchen.
Sure.
I do prefer working with meat. Mm-hmm. So of course.
It would be off brand for you to say anything
else. It would be off brand for me to say anything else, but so it wasn't mutually beneficial for me to work as a chef and play rugby.
Yeah.
So I just said, do you know what? I'm gonna put the chef thing on the back burner,
mm-hmm.
and we'll see where it takes us. If I need it, I have it. If I don't ever need it in my life, it's a skill.
You cook every day.
You cook every day. But it connects you with your food.
Yeah, it does.
I love food. I love eating. It's one of my favorite things to do. If I'm happy, I eat.
Yeah.
If I'm sad, I eat. If I'm bored, I eat.
100%.
Which is very bad for your waistline.
I mean, it served you as a prop, no doubt, you know.
It does serve you as a prop, but still, there's some boundaries that you need to put in place for yourself. Know that the content of your fridge is not going to change in 45 minutes if you haven't left the house. So I don't know why. Oh, I've just been in there. There's nothing. Well, it's still nothing. But I watched her do that. And yes, you're lucky in Northern Ireland. You have a lot of grass-fed beef in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
But what gets me is, especially with the biltong, is the fact that I am trying to be as sustainable in my approach to the meat I use as I possibly could be.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gone a step further and we have teamed up with two organic dairy farmers. And we use organically reared dairy cull cows. So when they come to the end of their milking life, we turn them into biltong.
Love that.
Because it is part of my sustainability approach. It's part of we use the whole animal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just I buy 100 kilos of topside in and I make biltong from topside.
Yeah.
100 kilos of topside. If you get 10 kilos of a side of beef of topside, you're lucky. 20 kilos of topside on an animal.
Wow.
So suddenly, because you only want to use topside, you're looking at five different animals that goes into a single 100 kilo raw batch of biltong, which gives you 50 kilos of product.
So how/when did you come to Northern Ireland? Like at what point?
So in 2011, my now wife, Alana, came out to South Africa as part of a rugby exchange program. That's where the rugby exchange program comes
from. Right.
So she came and she played rugby with the Northern or the Blue Bulls Rugby Union, the BBRU, and Tux. She arrived the morning we left for Reunion Island, thinking we're going to a reunion. but we were going to go and play a sevens tournament. And that was in June, end of May, June 2011. She came back to Northern Ireland at the end of July. And after harassing me for about 8 weeks, I finally panicked and gave in and decided, okay, fine, let's see this. If this works,
sure,
it could work. If not, I decided to join her back in Northern Ireland.
Uh-huh.
And I arrived, what's today's date? Yesterday, 11 years ago.
Wow.
Yesterday, 11 years ago.
Mom.
And again, came to suss it out to see, will it work? Will it not work? If it works, great. If it doesn't, I'm going back to South Africa, if it doesn't. And as they say, the rest is history.
So you meet this woman, she's over in South Africa, she's playing rugby. Like, how do you make that move professionally?
I was very lucky. I was I'm a qualified teacher as well.
Again, what other hard skill do you have up your sleeve?
I played rugby for the University of Pretoria,
right.
And they offered they helped me to basically get on the tertiary ladder, if you want to call it that.
Wow.
So I'm playing rugby. They're like, do you want to study? I'm like, what are we going to study? I know. Let's do language. And then when I did the language, and then they go like, oh, you want to do something else? I'm like, aye, what do you do with language? Oh, yeah, you teach. So let's go do that too. So again, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, that's true. What's your languages?
So I studied Afrikaans.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm not actually English. So I studied Afrikaans. I did specialize in literature.
So did you grow up speaking Afrikaans?
I grew up speaking Afrikaans.
Okay, so you studying Afrikaans would be like me studying English.
Yes.
So it's more so like you're in deep with the literature and you're in deep with the poetry.
I'm a bit of for someone that's so into sport, I am a bit of a language nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Like how languages are put together. And the structure of languages really, like, interests me.
That's cool.
So, and then, of course, literature, because if you take literature, depending on anybody's socio-economical belief system, how they grew up, all those things will influence how you read and how you interpret a piece of literature. They take us in school and they tell us that you should see this. That's part of programming, by the way. That's programming.
100%.
That is how they program us to be part of a certain civilization, And they say that, so you see this and this, it means this and this and this. But if you come from a different background or you come from a different class or you come from a different belief system, that might not mean that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, when I was doing my degree, and I saw that in languages, at the end of the day when I did my dissertation, that's what I did it on.
Nice.
Because that absolutely just was, my mind was blown.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was lucky enough then to get a career break to come to Northern Ireland. And I actually quit my job in March 2012.
Cool.
To stay in Northern Ireland.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I do want to keep chasing down this line. I want to open up like another little box here.
Yeah.
Like, what is Afrikaans? Like from a linguistic perspective. So English is obviously like a bastard language.
It's a bit of the same.
With lots of everything in it. A lot of French, bit of German, da-da-da-da-da.
So Afrikaans is one of the youngest recognized languages in the world.
Really?
Yeah. It was only, I think, in 1952 recognized as a official language.
Wow.
It was then adopted by the then apartheid government as the language of South Africa. It is a mixture of Dutch. It originates from Dutch. And then, of course, there's English and the influence of the French Huguenots whenever they arrived in South Africa. And you've got all the native languages. Like, we've got a word for a bug called gogga. We call it the gogga.
Right.
And that is a San word for a bug, a hoja.
Wow.
So yeah, it's like most languages, it's something that originated in a kitchen. Literally, it was called a kitchen language. It was spoken by the Dutch slaves initially.
Yeah.
And then the people who then it just developed from there as a language, to the point where there's, I think now, 9 different dialects of Afrikaans.
Wow.
That's spoken in South Africa. So yeah.
That's cool. And you know, you hear a lot people saying that speaking 2 different languages is like having 2 different parts of your brain. And I'm sure there is actual like something going on there. But I think it's really interesting what you say. Well, it gives you 2 different lenses to view the world through. Because, you know, different cultures have different ways of interpreting just about everything, you know. Like I said to you off mic, like I married a German and I thought, oh, this will be exactly the same. There'll be no issues here. And then you're like, what the heck?
Exactly. It's just in the way that different cultures do things.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it. You don't realize until you're faced with the reality that, why are you doing that like that way? Because I've always done it this way.
Yeah. Well, I was joking with somebody the other day. It's like all of our, you know, first year of marriage conflict was like, no, this is not how you make mozzarella salad. No, this is not how you load a dishwasher. No, this is not how you hang up your socks. You know what I mean? And it's just like, it's stuff that actually ultimately doesn't matter, but it's so ingrained in you that it has to be done this way that, you know, World War III breaks loose.
Yeah. And then before you know it, you're like, it's just like...
So, okay.
This whole mushroom.
More low-hanging fruit then, okay. South Africa is also a tale of 2 communities. Like everywhere in the world, it's a tale of much more communities.
It's actually a tale of much, much more communities.
Yeah. You go from one nation that has had severe conflict to another nation that has conflict.
When I turn around to my stepdad, Leon, and I say to him, I've got something to tell you guys. I'm gonna go stay in Belfast. And he's like, what?
Do you love suffering?
He's like, what? Why would you go to Belfast? Do you not read the news?
I'm so like, is that what like the lingering cultural assumption was?
Yeah.
About Belfast.
Yeah, again.
And this is like 2011, did you say?
This is 2011. Yeah.
Brutals?
Yeah. Because he said to me, they like to bomb each other up there. I'm like, and he's quite, but he passed away in August 2020, and he was very like, his history buff. Like Anglo-Boer War and World War II history. He was like,
wow.
He knew his facts. But Dave is quite funny. We're like I remember he had a conversation. Now this might step on some people's toes, but Alana was not the only member of the Northern Irish community that came over on this exchange.
Sure.
We had 2 other girls
who
came over from Derry/Londonderry. And he asked them, so he asked Alana, how do you identify? And again, because Alana grew up everywhere, she was like, yeah, well, I'm British-Irish.
Sure.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he asked those 2 girls exactly the same question. And they're like, we're Northern Irish. In that thick Derry accent. And it was just like, oh. And later, after they left that night, he said to me, yeah, it seems like a really interesting place. So when I when I came and I told them, I'm going to Belfast, he was just like, oh, well, if it works, it works.
Sure.
Yeah.
So like, what was your own expectation versus reality?
If I go somewhere, I tend not to try and build up an expectation.
Sure.
Because if you have a preconceived notion or idea about what you think something should be, you are 99% of the time left utterly disappointed.
It's true. Expectations are resentments waiting to happen.
There you go.
I think that's an AA thing.
that is just, I came here with no expectation. again, coming from South Africa, where you are new, I think South Africans, or I feel South Africans, live with a certain amount of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that if you meet South Africans that have are fresh in Northern Ireland.
Right.
They will be looking around them constantly. I've lost a bit of that, so I barely lock my back door. I also have three massive dogs, so you're more than welcome to try and go to my house. Be careful of the big black one. I think she will bite. But I feel a lot more laid back mm-hmm. in Northern Ireland, where if I go back to South Africa, you have the – and I do get – it's because my parents would constantly be like, you need to watch this. Watch your stuff. Don't put your phone there. Mm-hmm. Lock your car. Lock your windows. Keep looking around you. You can't stop at the traffic light because someone might come and smash your window.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have your wallet on the seat. Stupid things like that.
Sure.
We all do it over here.
Yeah.
Oh, I just fly into the car. I throw my phone and I throw my wallet on the seat next to me. Do you lock your car at the traffic light? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
I
remember when I lived in New York for 3 years. I remember sitting, and I was fresh off the boat, right? And I was sitting in a cafe, and I don't know, I was buying something off Amazon, and I had my credit card on the table beside my laptop, and all of a sudden, heard a guy knocking the window and being really angry at me and pointing at my card. And I was like, what? And he goes, your card? And I was like, what? And he goes, turn it over, someone might come and steal your credit card number walking past. I was like, oh boy, we're in a different place.
You're in a different place now. You're in a different place now. But that's the same in South Africa. And South Africa is an absolutely beautiful country. But like Northern Ireland, they've got their own bag of issues. At the minute, electricity. What is the makes different Northern Ireland different from South Africa? We've got working lights. Because they've got a thing called load shedding at the minute, where for, I think it is something like a total of 8 to 12 hours a day, that certain parts of the country won't have electricity because there's not enough electricity to supply the entire country.
Wow.
But they sell vast amounts of the electricity off to neighboring countries. Let's just leave it there. There's a lot of corruption.
Yeah.
But if you want to be looked after and you want to be treated with, like, you will always be welcomed with open arms. Mm-hmm. South African people are some of the friendliest and most welcoming people in the world. Like over here, there's always a minority that makes it a little difficult. But the majority of South Africans are good people with good hearts and big open hearts, and they will always try and help you regardless of where you're from or who you are or what you look like. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So you move over here, like most people, for love. It's 2011.
That's how you build your census up every couple of years.
Yeah. It's just, we just have like an international honeypot campaign.
we send people all around the world and then try to lure, you know, like, high-flying internationals over to the country. It's all part of the elaborate scheme.
When did you start your company?
So we started Kanaku, we registered Kanaku in 2012.
Wow, you guys were swift.
Yeah, we registered Kanaku in 2012.
And Kanaku, give us why? What's the name? What's in the name?
So Kanaku means it's time in Sotho.
Love it.
Because it's always time.
It's time.
It's always time for Biltong, always time for meat.
And for the uninitiated, how would you define Biltong?
So anybody who asks me what is Biltong, it's cured. It's a cured and air-dried meat snack
mm-hmm.
that you eat as it is. Like South Africans would eat biltong like the average Northern Irish person eats crisps.
That's why you guys are so strong.
Yeah. It's really high in protein. And it's just – it's a good filling snack.
Mm-hmm. So you say high in protein, right? 100 grams of normal mince that I buy is what, like 24 grams?
Yeah, that depends on the fat content ratio. Yeah. You can look at about 18, 16. Again, depends on where you get it from, what type of animal it is, sure, what the fat content is.
And your biltong is coming in at?
100 grams of biltong is 40.8 grams of protein at 50% moisture loss.
Mad. And so,
again, the higher the moisture loss, the higher the protein content.
Yeah.
Because for us, it takes a kilo to make 500 grams of biltong.
So you're effectively getting twice as much meat in the one...
Yes.
Gram. That's a very layman's way to put it.
Yes.
So it's unbelievably high.
And the drier it is, the higher the percentage goes. Mm. But again, when we started making biltong in 2012, we registered in 2012 because I was like, where we come from, if you make biltong, you take it, you slice it up, you hang it outside,
mm-hmm,
in a little netted area.
Mm-hmm.
In the garage or on the porch, and it dries out over 4 or 5 days. It's great.
Love it.
If you looked outside Northern Ireland, you cannot do that.
You're like, why has my 1 kg of mince turned into 5 kg?
Yeah, there's so much water in the air. So we had to look at getting specialist ways to dry it,
mm-hmm,
that fits with all the environmental health laws that is in Northern Ireland as well.
Mm.
Because in South Africa, again...
I was going to say welcome to the EU, but you understand what I mean, because we're not technically part of the EU anymore.
Well...
There's a lot of legacy laws.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of protocols. Let's say we're just saying protocols. But you still have a lot more food safety laws.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I could build a wooden box and dry it in the garage, and away we go, 2 to 3 dogs looking into the box all day. Can you imagine that? That would be so easy. It's like me butchering on the kitchen table. I don't know who would be more offended, environmental health or my wife. Dogs would love it. We literally had to investigate and make a plan, mm-hmm, on how we can start doing this. The reason I started making my own biltong was because, one, I was buying biltong in from England, which was supposed to be some of the best biltong in England, and I just didn't like it.
Sure.
But because of the sport, and because I'm in a testing pool still, I would rather get my nutrients in through food than through regulated, it's not really regulated, the sports nutrition side of food.
Yeah.
So I would much rather get it in from proper real food.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no better recovery snack than a pint of organic milk and a bag of biltong.
Mm.
Post-workout, that stuff saved me when I was doing 14 sessions a week.
Wow.
And it's real food.
Yeah.
I know where it comes from. And I was buying this stuff in, and like 2012, it was costing me 75 quid a kilo. I eat a kilo of biltong a week.
Sure.
So before you know it, you're looking at 300 quid a month,
mm-hmm,
that you're spending on biltong.
So you're like, look, I'm just going to start a business to offset this cost.
So I actually didn't think I'm just going to start the business first. I was like, I'm going to start making it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we registered as a company is because if you're VAT registered, it means that you can get the VAT and stuff back. So it doesn't cost you as much. And if you then want to go down the route of opening a business, you have all of that back there already.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't decide what I wanted to do. Do I want to go and work for someone? Do I want to build this? Do I want to chase this? It's like... We all have to live and eat, and if you work for yourself, it's easier to work for someone while building up slowly,
mm-hmm,
than it is to go, okay, fine, I'm just going to throw everything into this.
Yeah.
And then you could get into a position where you're like, whew.
Absolutely. And I think that story gets kind of glamorized, yeah, I think overly so, you know, like there's a great guy I've had on the podcast before, and he says,
entrepreneurs are kind of marketed as like risk takers. And he goes, I don't really agree with that. He says entrepreneurs are risk managers.
Yeah.
And I actually subscribe to that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just put it all on red and hope for the best.
No, no. It's like trying to throw a Hail Mary with every decision you make.
Yeah. If you're 16 and you've got not, like, go for it. But if you have a family and, you know, you've got responsibilities, that's tough.
And I'm still in the position where Kanaku is still not my full-time job.
Sure.
I'm still a butcher.
Yep.
I still work for the farm simply because I'm trying to manage that risk.
Yep.
Especially in the times that we are now.
Totally.
But it's just, I then started making it for me to consume it myself. And some of my friends got wind of me doing it. And as you do, you start building a following. And then suddenly we ended up on a BBC program. I still don't know how that happened. I actually still don't know how that happened. I knew Alana was busy with something because her sister said to her, oh, they're looking for there was a casting call out for Top of the Shop. And Alana's sister said to her, oh, why didn't you guys do that? And Alana was like, oh, yeah, this is a great idea. And again, I do this thing where Alana talks to me and I go, yeah.
Sounds good, sweetie.
Sounds great.
4 weeks later, BBC's at the door. Who are these guys?
What are you guys doing here? Oh, did I say yes to that? And then we ended up winning Top of the Shop with Tom Kerridge on BBC Two. And that just put us in a different league.
Wow.
Where we had people in England who was buying biltong off us, but we sold a phenomenal amount of biltong. I think we had a 12-week waiting list. And the biltong dryers were running 24/7 for 12 weeks. It was 100 kilo batch in, 100 kilo batch out, 100 kilo batch in, 100 kilo batch out. And as we were literally taking the batch out and slicing it up, I was busy making the next batch.
Crazy.
To go into the box as soon as this packing process was done. Because it was literally just that conveyor belt system. We're very lucky that we've retained a lot of those customers.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are just a little bit more spaced out instead of everybody putting their orders in all at once because it was over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We literally, I think it was something like 35,000 pounds worth of biltong that we sold in 2 weeks.
It's crazy. And I love, what I love about your business is in some ways, no, not all the time, but in some ways it's a subscription business. Yeah. You know, because people consume biltong the same way you do,
yeah.
You know? And so the fact that you can say, and I think like more and people are moving this way where you can say, you know, I'm going to spend X amount of pounds on supplements and protein nonsense. You know, these protein bars that are on the market are just ridiculous. And the amount of money people spend on them is outrageous. Or I'm going to take that money and I'm going to spend it on a really, really high quality, sustainably farmed, top shelf product that's good for me and for the planet.
Well, that is what, again, with like the likes of our subscription is, it makes it easier and it makes it more affordable for people to get their fix. Because some of my friends say that I'm like a bit like a drug dealer with this. That biltong is highly addictive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not me saying that.
I'm about to give you the testimonial here, right? So met you at Elmfield Market, bought, I don't know if it was 100 or 200 grams, took it back to the table of people I was with, including my two-year-old daughter, gone. My wee girl, she tried a bit and then she was like, more. I give her a little bit more. She was like, more. And then same thing happened with, you know, the four or five people I was with. And it was desecrated. I was raging. I was like, mate, you guys ate all my biltong.
Like I said to you, 100 gram pack. I ate two bags on my way here because I couldn't help myself. What's that thing about never trust a butcher who doesn't eat their own meat?
Yeah, that's what they say.
And Yeah, it just goes. It goes very quickly, and it's literally like, I know Pringles framed the, or coined the phrase, "Once you pop, you can't stop."
Yeah.
But the our biltong was pretty much like that. The moment you start eating it,
so true.
It does. It's like before you know it, the bag is empty.
Yeah.
And you're literally left there rustling through the bag on the seat next to you, especially when you're driving.
Actually, I just remember one of my mates. He said, "Mate, this is like if beef jerky was made with like Dean's Meat Locker quality medium rare steaks." And I was like, sell that to them. They will take that as a tagline.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And it's also because there is a difference between jerky and biltong.
It's totally different. I don't really like products. Jerky. Like if I eat jerky, it's a discipline. Like I have to force my way through it. Whereas that I could eat. I don't know. I'm looking at that box. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Is that 500 grams? Is that
it's something? 400 grams.
I feel like that won't make it home is how I feel today.
A very big possibility.
All right. So let's do this. Right, we're on your show, but we'll do it anyway. What are we dealing with here?
So there's four packs of Biltong in there. There is our original, which is the flagship flavor. That's the one that won us Top of the Shop with Tom Kerridge. It's also got a great taste award. It was the first Biltong to ever win a gold Blast Na Erin at the Blast. Then there's garlic, which is one of my favorites. There's our chili Biltong, which also has a Blast. It doesn't have a gold, but it's got a bronze Blast, and it's got a great taste award. It won in the. We're actually waiting for the charcuterie board results to come out. And then there's a new flavor that we're playing with.
This is what's in my mouth right now.
Yeah, which is called No Smoke Without Fire.
Wow.
And it's a double oak smoked chili and lemon flavor that is...
What's the sweetness? So good.
It's the chili. Wow. So it's double oak smoke. So again, with oak smoke, you get... It's like oak smoked bacon. You get that sweetness from the smoke.
Mm.
Now, chili has a natural sweetness to it as well. They use bird eye chili, the trouble sauces guys, Dr. Trouble sauces. And then there's a hint of, and I think that that bit of citrus, lemon, just brings a balance to it. And it just like smooths it off at the end.
Do you know what that tastes like? Not what it tastes like. There's a Wall Street guy I used to know. And he would go out. He's probably an alcoholic, but sure, he's not listening, so it's fine. But he would say, you know what, mate, there's only so much filet mignon you can eat. You get bored of it after a while. He says, for me, it's all about the wine. And he said something like, a glass of really good red wine is like a whole meal in itself. And I feel like that No Smoke, No Fire is like eating a whole plate of flavor and food in the one product. That is incredible.
No, but that's just like, that is one of my favorites at the minute. And we've been playing with it for about 2 months. Trying to get the balance right, because initially it's like with baking, making cured meats, making charcuterie is a balancing act.
Yeah.
You stand and you have three or four different tubs with different spice mixtures, and they're in different concentrations, and you play with them to see which one is going to go best. And again, it's not just my taste. Because something I might love, someone else might find absolutely atrocious. So what I would do then is my whole process of developing would be like, I would have three or four different recipes and I would try all three or four of them out in the same go. I would hang them up, I would dry them, I would slice them, and I would let people, I would know by numbering the bags, which one is which.
Yeah.
And I would blind test it with people.
I love that.
Because then they give you honest feedback because they don't know what's in it.
Yeah.
And people who tried this one, I took it down to the Ulster training over summer, one of our Ulster training sessions over summer, and I literally lost 1.5 kilos of biltong. Because the physio Naomi literally laid into it.
Wow.
But I think we're on to a winner with that one.
I think so too.
Keep our fingers crossed. That was entered into the Choco Tree Board Awards. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. I've got no idea when it will be properly announced. I know they've started announcing some of the whole muscle and the salamis, but they haven't gone to the snack category yet.
Love it. So do you sell them any South Africans? Like, what's the South African diaspora like in this part of the world? Because I imagine, like, I remember, again, when I lived in Manhattan, there was a place, oh, what was it called? Had a great name. It was called Assault and Battery, and it was a chippy.
Yeah.
And, like, we all flocked to it, you know?
With Biltong, again, we are two women in the meat industry in this. And the meat industry tends to be a very masculine, masculine industry. Now, for some reason, I find myself in masculine industries all the time because rugby is perceived as quite masculine. American football is perceived as quite masculine. I'm a butcher, which is quite a masculine, masculine job.
Do you have
job.
Hair? Most butchers I know are bald.
I've got hair. Yeah. Well. We'll just have to see how the scrums affect the back of my head after a couple of years. But I do think that you will constantly get, especially South African men coming up to you and they will go, oh, I make my own. And I'm like, and I'm glad you make your own.
Yeah.
I'm delighted that people make their own biltong because yours is always going to be the best.
Yeah, of course.
If you your own stuff, if you make a piece of biltong, you're going to think your biltong 100%. Is the best biltong.
Mate, when I make cookies, no cookie on the planet is better. None.
And regardless of what it looks like, it's the best cookie in the world.
But I tell you one thing, there's no way I'm making my own biltong, and especially not on a regular basis. You would not even want to see what my kitchen would like look like after 2 weeks. Brutal.
But so you get a lot of South Africans who come in, oh, we make our own. And I do you know what? I am glad people make their own because, again, I come from a sporting background. I love competition. I'm not scared of it.
Sure.
Because steel sharpens steel.
Mm-hmm.
You can only know how good your product is by putting it against someone else's product.
Yeah.
And the more people who make biltong, the more people will consume biltong.
Yeah.
That means there's a growing market, which is good for everybody.
It is, yeah. So the rising tide lifts all ships.
And I am not the type of person that's going to be nasty to someone else because they are a biltong maker. The biltong market in the UK has grown substantially.
Mm-hmm.
When we were looking into it, there were 35 different companies registered as biltong makers in the UK.
That's actually more than I thought. And that was 2011.
Of which Sussman Biltong at that stage, I think it's now New World Foods, is the biggest one. New World Foods has the license for the majority. They actually have brands. Several of the big brands you will find in supermarkets are produced by one place. And it's like spreading the gospel of biltong. And it becomes people will then start to be able to distinguish between really good and really average biltong. Because
mm-hmm.
no biltong was bad. But not all biltong was created equally either.
Yeah.
So that is what we hope is that just more people take part in and try biltong and experience biltong.
Yeah. So you obviously do quite a lot of markets.
Yes.
Where you're interfacing with the general public. And like me, I'm coming up to your van is awesome, your truck. It's really, really cool looking. But I'm looking at it and I've got that weird, like, squinty-eyed look on my face. I'm like, what is this? What are you actually selling? So you have a really unique opportunity to connect with your customer and educate your customer week in, week out.
Yeah.
How have you found that process to be in terms of, like, how do people react whenever they finally get it, whenever they try it? Because there's nothing really like this in the Northern Irish frame of reference. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what I am very bad for calling people out. So you would see this very prim and proper old woman stood a little bit further back, and suddenly her face shrivels up like a raisin. And you know, like, she's like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I can, I've got my spidey sense tells me where these people, and I will pick on you. And I will tell you that, because I'm of the opinion that you cannot pull a face if you haven't tried it.
Mm.
And don't tell me that you tried it on your honeymoon 75 years ago in South Africa. Try it. Because the biltong that you get here and the biltong you get in South Africa is also not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pick on them and I'll get them to try it. And 80% of the time, you can tell by how their faces change that they are really enjoying what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You have the 20% that says, it's not for me.
No.
But 80% of the time, you can physically see the face change. And those people will then buy it and take it back. We have a lot of repeat customers online who started buying at markets. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, markets gives me the opportunity to interact with my end user.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me the opportunity to give people the opportunity to change, to taste what I'm doing. Have a bite. Because
mm-hmm.
that is built on a sharing product.
Yep.
Not that you want to share it all the time, but it's, again, if we watch rugby on a Saturday afternoon, the snacks on the table is a big bowl of chips, crisps as you call it.
Sure.
Some nuts and Bombay mix and Truevors and biltong.
Yeah.
That is what is put on the table with your dips. And if you want to dip your biltong on the dip, you dip it. But it's the quickest way to eat 2 kilos of meat. And it's something that we really want people to experience.
Yeah.
Because it's part of our cultural heritage and where we come from.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Okay. Let's shift gears slightly then. How have you seen Northern Ireland change over the last 10 years, if at all?
Northern Ireland. Now, I think Northern Ireland is becoming more... They've opened their minds to new experiences a bit more. You still have a minority of people that are holding on to what they know and love and don't want to let go of it, but... You can see it in the different people that walk the streets. People of different ethnicities, like
absolutely.
Even 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when I got here, I don't think that the public in Northern Ireland was as diverse as it is now. I remember coming down the Ulmer Road, and you had the Asian supermarket and the Bangladeshi supermarket, but that was it.
Yeah.
And now you've got an African supermarket. The Asian supermarket has just grown so much. The Bangladeshi supermarket is even bigger than it was. And there's more of them. So it's not just 3 or 4 shops.
Mm.
Places like Sawyer's are selling more international cuisine. You've got Polish supermarkets. Mm-hmm. So there's a diversity creeping into Northern Ireland.
Yep.
Slowly but surely. You will always have your diehards. Yeah. We have that in South Africa as well.
Yeah.
Who has been born and has grown up with a certain view on how the world should be.
Uh-huh.
And they lose out on new experiences because of their views. But they are the only people that can change that.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment your focus changes from what you think you know, and you embrace the new things that's around you, your life opens up and you take part in so many better experiences.
Yeah, for sure.
But that can only happen if those people allow themselves to do that.
That is well said. That's very well said. Is there anything that you struggle to get food-wise that you, you know, would have at home? So I'll give you an example. I was trying to, well, I don't even know what I was trying to bake. I'm really not a baker. I know I mentioned cookies earlier on. Don't get the wrong impression of me, guys. I am no baking connoisseur. I wish I was. I was trying to bake something and I needed golden syrup. You know, like lions.
Golden syrup is very difficult to get. Mate,
impossible. Yeah. Like, and I was like on forums, like Googling, like, is there any of this in all of Germany? And they were like, nope.
Yeah, they don't. The Germans don't do golden syrup.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was like, oh yeah, everywhere in the world is bound to have
golden
syrup. The
Dutch don't do golden syrup either.
So niche. Yeah. So is there anything like that where you're like, ah, I just really sometimes freaking wish I could buy this thing and I can't get it?
There's a type of cereal that we grew up with called Pro Nitro.
Okay.
And look, there's so many E numbers in it. It must glow in the dark. And it's soya protein, which, let's face it, in the current climate where with how the environment's going, soya isn't something you want to be partaking in. but yeah, Pro Nitro is one thing.
Mm.
The other thing I really like, and thankfully the guys from Hellbent has sorted that out for me, I like drinking brandy.
Yeah.
Hennessy, that's all right. But there's a...
Sorry, the Hennessy, if you want to sponsor this episode, let me know.
There's something about distilled pot brandy that is distilled in South Africa that is just... It's so easy to drink. It's quite sweet. And then you drink it with Coke. So it goes down really easy. Gives you a massive hangover the next day.
Oh, I love that.
Especially because you always think that you're very strong after three or four of them. And then you start mixing other things in with it. So, but that is something that I initially struggled to get, but they have started bringing stuff in like that. There's a lot of South African shops in London and in England. Again, there's, I think one of the last censuses, there was something like there's 500,000 or 600,000 South Africans living in London.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is massive.
Yeah, it's huge.
And again, if you look at Biltong in London itself, you can literally buy Biltong on every street corner.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
You've got so many producers of Biltong in England because of the amount of South Africans and the rugby culture.
Yeah.
A lot of rugby players, a lot of people who support rugby, especially now that like the URC is played between South African and Irish and Welsh and Scottish teams. A lot of those guys travel or better traveled now. So you have that influx of like people has been to South Africa and they want Biltong to watch while they, or to consume while they're watching their game at home or at Kingspan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the amount of people that are starting to realize that this is what Biltong is and this is what we can get from it.
Yeah, love it. Very cool. There's a series of stock questions that we end every episode with.
Yeah.
Take them any way you want. You can go highly, highly personal. You can go highly, highly professional. You can blank out and look out into the distance for 30 seconds. That's all good. The first one is, what has been your most challenging moment so far? And how were you able to either overcome that or pass through that moment?
Is this personal or is this within the business?
It's whatever you want. I like personal, but I'm never going to nolan anybody.
For me, one of the biggest things for me to overcome in Northern Ireland was the weather.
Sure.
The greyness, the darkness, especially in winter. And the only way that you overcome it is by actively working and making sure that your head stays in check.
The darkness is very, very key in that. I only have come to appreciate, because we all talk about the weather, but the dark winters are tough.
It's like earlier this morning, it was grey.
Mm-hmm.
and it's raining and it's grey, and it's grey for 3 or 4 days. And I swear, after 2 days of grey, I don't know whether it's because my skin is literally craving vitamin D, or whether it is just the grey, the sheer volume and the weight of the greyness. But it's just like, it got me down. Like there was, I would say it was in 2014, 15, it really screwed with my head.
Absolutely.
And then it brings on bouts of homesickness and stuff like that. But if you keep your head in check, and you find yourself things to do that distract you from the grey, you'll be grand.
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
No.
Watch this, ready?
Aha! It's a come on, done.
Is it daylight?
It's a therapeutic light box.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know any of the science on this?
No.
Right, my gift to you, you've been generous. You've shared your bounty with me. Yeah. I will share my bounty with you. You can take that home. That's a game changer right there, okay?
Yeah.
That is, some people call it a sad lamp.
A sad lamp, actually, I've heard of
that. Yeah, we hear this. This is
seasonal
fun.
And...
seasonal affective disorder lamp, okay? It's funny, this shows you a lot between linguistical differences between UK and Ireland and America. In America, they call it a happy lamp. I was like, of course there's that. But 30 minutes in the morning, like around whatever time you're eating 2 bites of pancake and a little bit of peanut butter toast, it stimulates the back of your eye, which is really part of your brain, to help regulate your hormones. And it's like one of the most effective treatments, not just treatments, but preventions, managements of a whole range of mental, you know, health disorders, whether it's anxiety or depression or whatever. But, you know, it's really coming in now. Like there's some really big kind of superstar academic podcasters that are really trying to bring this to the general public. And so I think that is an essential tool in my tool belt for winter. So,
I've heard about them. I'm very lucky that we normally would have a trip planned to South Africa, like, over Christmassy. Now the last 2 years that hasn't really come too much.
Sure.
But thank you very much. I might just go and get myself one and let you bask in the sunny, happy glory of your
bro, sad lamp. I'm not gonna lie, I've got like 3 or 4.
Okay, cool. So flip side of that. Proudest moment, most successful moment?
Oh, there's a couple. It depends on how you measure success.
Does.
If I measure it by family, it's definitely the day our little boy was born. And the moment I took, and I was just looking at this little body, and it's just like, wow. And then it was the realization of, oh. But yeah, that was one of my proudest moments. Sporting wise, playing international rugby, there's not a lot. That is the absolute pinnacle of where you can go. Running out for Ireland in the 2017 Women's World Cup at Kingspan.
Awesome.
Getting my first World Cup cap at my home stadium. There's not a lot of people who can say that they've done that.
Yep.
With the Biltong, just the sheer amount of... And I understand how some people say that you get to a point where... Oh, it's just another award. But every award that we win is a moment of pride. Because it tells us that what we're doing is on the right track. The Gold Blasnaer is a highlight.
Yeah.
Winning Top of the Shop was the highlight. We didn't get to bask in the glory of winning Top of the Shop because we had so many orders to fulfill that after those 3 months.
Yeah, there was no rooftop cocktails. It was like, there was, quickly ship it out the door.
There was literally trying to get stuff out. And then we, in 2019, we absolutely cleared out at the British Chocolatry Awards. Where we've got another flavor called Pain in the Hole, That's what it says in the packet. That was in 2021, where it won gold and best in class at the British Shooker Tree Awards.
That's your real spicy one, yeah.
Yeah, that's the real spicy one. That's what it says in the packet.
Yeah.
So, but that is professionally, and in what we do, yeah, that's definitely the highlight.
It's awesome. All right, two more, then we're done. If you could go back in time to, and let's go for 18-year-old Ilse. What sort of things would you say to her, knowing everything you know now?
Oh, man, I wish I knew what I knew now when I was 18. Life would be so easy.
It would be like living life on, like, easy mode, wouldn't it?
It would be like.
Yeah. I always think about it. I'm always like, oh, can you imagine? Even from, like, a business perspective, like, going back and being 16, being like, right, this thing called digital is really, really going to take off. Let's really make a go of this, you know?
I would say to myself that, and I know everybody always say, just hang in there.
Mm.
But it's literally when you think your days are the darkest they've ever been, you never really reach that ultimate darkness, because there's always light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And again, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Whatever you go for, go for it. Throw yourself in and just do it.
Yeah.
And what is meant for you will never pass you by. That's it.
Do you really believe that?
Yeah.
Over here, you've obviously heard it loads of times where it's like, sure, if it's written for you.
Yeah.
You know?
I do believe that. I also don't believe in luck.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we are the product of what we become. Mm-hmm. And that if it's meant for you, it won't pass you by, because you are going to go that road. But there's no such thing as luck. Anything in this world that you want, if you wanted enough, you would work for it.
It's true.
And life is not a lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to win the lottery, what's the first thing you need to do?
Go and buy about 100,000 lottery tickets.
Exactly. You need to go and buy a ticket.
Yeah.
That's the first step.
Yep.
So the first step is to do something. There's always an action. It's not just, oh, I'm going to sit here and I'm just going to wait for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't harvest anything if you haven't planted first.
Yeah. I remember interviewing three priests about 2 years ago. And one of them said, no one has ever plowed a field by turning it over in their mind.
Exactly.
I was like, where have you been my whole life? Yeah.
But
I think people don't want it enough. I don't think there's enough honesty amongst, you know, ourselves, where if we actually truly did want it, then we would do something about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's fine if you don't want certain things. That's cool. But then I think you have to, you know, zip it a bit.
We live in a society where we are forced to be certain things and to believe certain things and look at certain things certain ways. And we are not all capable of being something that we are not.
Bro, you've given the Michael Jordan quote a lot. There's no way I could ever be Michael Jordan, no matter how much I wanted it.
But that's it.
I couldn't be a prop. Look
but
at me.
But you have to be honest. Like you said, the honesty comes from yourself. Yeah. The most difficult thing in the world is to be honest with yourself.
It's true.
Because other people might not be able to buy your bullshit. But if you believe, if you tell yourself that rubbish in your head constantly, you are going to believe it.
Yeah.
So instead of telling yourself all the rubbish, why don't you just flip it on its side?
Mm-hmm.
Be honest with yourself. Respect yourself, because that comes down to self-respect.
Yeah.
And do what you need to do to get to where you want to get.
Yeah.
Because you can't say you're going to be a big game hunter if you solely plant yourself in front of the TV on your sofa. I don't see big game in your living room. Oh, you might have a big dog, but
You might be a big gamer, more likely.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, true. I'm playing Call of Duty. I'm practicing for my big game hunting days. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
But the world is not the same that it was 18 years ago. Like, when I was 18, oh, well, geez, that's a bit further back than 18 years ago. It's 20, almost, yeah, again, let's just keep that there. Don't have to do the mental math now. 20 years ago was not the same as it is today.
Yeah.
20 years ago, you had different things that you wanted to do.
It's true.
20 years ago, if you told me that I'm going to be sat talking to Matt in a podcast in Belfast, of all godforsaken places, about biltong and butchery and rugby, I would tell you, have you fallen your head? Are you okay there? You might need help, professional help.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Final question. What's the kindest thing someone's ever done for you?
The kindest thing someone's ever done for me. I was in an airport, and I actually left. I went to wash my hands just after getting off the plane, and I left my passport and my boarding pass and everything in the bathroom. And when I got to the gate, I got flustered, and it was not there, and I couldn't find it. And this old lady walked up to me with it in her hand, and she looked at me, and she just said to me, "Sometimes we just need to pay a little bit more attention to what we do." To which I was like, "Are you for real?" And she handed me my passport. And she just said to me, "Focus on what you need to do, but always pay it forward."
Mm.
And I think that is one of the kindest things that people, anybody has, even though I thought she was an
absolute
troll in
it. Yeah.
It's like, yes, it's my fault. I left it at my hoop. But whatever you do, just pay it forward.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do still. Just pay it forward. Whenever someone does something nice for you, pay it on.
Mm.
Pay it forward.
Bonus question. I'm looking at the ingredients list on here, and I don't see heroin mentioned, which is confusing because I've eaten this whole packet. So, do you have the secret ingredient of what Pringles heroin. Has?
It's not heroin.
Is it the Pringle drug, or what do you have in there?
No, I don't know. It's
all gone.
I think it's the good beef.
Delicious.
I think our secret ingredient is just the good beef.
Yeah. It melts on the tongue.
It needs to be the star of the show.
It's so good. Again, I go back to my two-year-old. My two-year-old devoured it. Yeah. You know, that's a good test, the two-year-old test.
Good. Well, like I said, children is never wrong.
Yeah.
If you want to know if your product is any good,
yeah,
give it to a kid.
So good.
Because they will always give you their own honest opinion.
Yeah. Elsie, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having us.
Unbelievable stuff. Look, thank you so much once again for listening. My name is Matthew Thompson, and we're on a mission to share 350 conversations that celebrate Northern Ireland and the incredible people who call it home. Massive thanks once again to NI Connections for making today's episode possible. And like I said at the top of the show, you can find out more about our global diaspora, listen to other conversations in this series, and sign up to their free monthly newsletter by visiting niconnections.com. Other than that, hope you really enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to catching you again soon.